You're listening to Vatican Radio. Theologians and experts on Christianity in China are meeting in Hong Kong this week for an international conference examining ecumenical and interfaith relations across the region. The 10th annual conference of the Ecclesiological Investigations International Research Network will also be exploring broader issues of dialogue between faith and culture in China, as well as looking at the impressive growth rates of religious faith in other Asian countries too. The encounter, entitled Christianity and Religions in China, Past, Present and Future, runs from July 20th to 24th. Among the organisers is Georgetown University Professor Gerard Mannion, founding chair of the Ecclesiological Investigations Network. He sat down with me to talk about the importance of Asia's ecumenical and interfaith context for the whole of the Catholic world today. Let's start off by looking at the location. Why did you choose to hold this 10th international conference in China?
Well, China ranks number 7 in the world in terms of the number of Christians in the country. The most generous estimates would put the number of Christians at 120 million. The most conservative puts it in something like 20-odd million officially. Among the most reliable, 70 million would probably be a good estimate.
It's very difficult to get statistics.
It's incredibly difficult because a lot of Christians might be attached to what's known as house churches, which often means something different to what it would in the West, but these are more unofficial groups. Some are part of the official government-approved churches. Protestants are the most populous. Catholics are about 9 million on some estimates. And there's also regional variations as well. So it's difficult, but certainly religion is very important in China, and Christianity is one of the most important of the 5 major religions in China. People who practice faith, for example, when you put them together, are almost double the number of official Communist Party members. So it's incredibly significant for China. China obviously is a country that is globally important and only going to increase in importance. Asia, in terms of its regional importance, is increasing. If you look at the last 100 years, the number of Christians in Asia has more than doubled, and in terms of the percentage of the global population of Christians. And when you look at the fact that Christianity is a minority religion in Asia, the numbers of people in Asia still points to an enormous number of Christians. And of course, Christianity, on some definitions, really was born out of Asia as well in many parts. And of course, Christianity is not relatively new to China. In terms of modern missionary movements, it's relatively new. But there's evidence of Christians in as early as the 7th or 8th century in China. And so the history of Christianity in this region is deep and it's rich. And it's grown increasingly rich. The number of diverse Christian groups in China today is hugely important. So, as you know, the Ecclesiological Investigation Network exists to encourage dialogue, to bring people together, to encounter different contexts, different perspectives, and different Christian communities. And because of the increasing importance of Christian communities in China and Asia in general, we thought that it was long overdue that we held one of our international conferences there. And we're very pleased that a majority of the presentations and papers will be by people from the Asian context working in or working on the Asian context.
So it won't just be focused on China, but you'll have plenty of input from other parts of the continent.
Yes, so the main focus is naturally China and Chinese context, past, present, future. But there will also be more pan-Asian contributions and also contributions on other aspects of the Asian context as well.
Last year, you were in Georgetown, mm-hmm. at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., looking at the impact and the promise of Vatican II. So although these two things seem quite separate, in a way there's a kind of connection, perhaps, is there, that Asia is maybe the continent where the impact of Vatican II has been most developed?
Very much so. You know, it's this year's conference is very much a follow-up to last year's conference, and we try each year to build on the previous years. And our going to China will very much take forward the dialogue and the interaction and studies began last year in Washington, D.C. The Church has gained a great deal from the embracing of Vatican II in Asia, and also the growth for Catholic involvement in the ecumenical movement that Vatican II gave. And of course, we've learned a great deal from our Asian brothers and sisters about ecumenism, because interfaith and ecumenical reality has been a day-to-day factor for Asians a lot longer than it has been in the European and North American context. And it's taken as a given that people live in interreligious settings and ecumenical settings in Asia for a very long time, very different to how the ecumenical movement grew in Europe, for example. And it's quite encouraging that some of the studies and sessions we will have in China will be on the history of the ecumenical movement in China, and particularly in Hong Kong itself. There's some empirical and historical research being done, and some of the cutting-edge researchers from the Chinese context will be among our speakers during the week. Another session will also be about philanthropy and Catholic social teaching, for example, in China. And one of our other sessions will be looking at socialism, past, present and future, which will also have a historical as well as a Pan-Asian contribution as well. So we're looking to build on, you know, where the church has been, where the church is going. What's the continuing legacy of development such as Vatican II? But of course, we're an ecumenical group, and also we're attentive to interfaith dialogue as well. So we're very pleased that among our hosts in Hong Kong would be the Minghua Anglican Theological College and the Center for Catholic Studies at the Chinese University of Hong Kong. So we'll be living an ecumenical reality as well as reflecting upon those.
You talk about the five main religions in China today, but it's true, isn't it, that the sense of a religious person or religious belonging is quite different in that Asian context. It's often much more about the cultural practice rather than it is about the sense of belonging to a faith community.
Yes, for sure. I mean, my good friend and colleague Peter Fan, who will be there with us in Hong Kong, has spoken about being religious interreligiously, being something that comes quite natural to Asians. So, for example, if you look at the Indian context, you'll see that a lot of Hindus will celebrate the Christian festivals, and Christians will celebrate the Hindu festivals, and Buddhists will celebrate Hindu and Christian festivals, for example. And I think this is something that's very inherent in Asian contexts, and for China in particular. So when people talk about, for example, a history of Chinese religious thought, really nobody's quite sure where philosophy begins and religion ends, or vice versa. So Taoism, for example, or Confucianism, there's a big debate among people who are experts in the history of Chinese religious and philosophical thought whether Confucianism or Taoism is a philosophy or a religion or a bit of both. And that blurring of the distinction really is perhaps helpful to try and understand religion in the place that everyday life of Asian people. It's a way of life for them. And of course, really, when you go back to look at the history of Christianity, that begins as a way of life as well. The notion of Christianity as the way is there throughout the Gospels. And perhaps we've compartmentalized it a bit too much in post-Enlightenment Europe and North America, that religion is something that infuses everyday life in many more ways than just your institutional belonging. And I think we have a lot to learn from the Asian context with regard to that, that we became bogged down really in the post-Reformation and post-Enlightenment divisions and the institutional dividing lines in the West and North America. And I think the future will look a lot more like the Asian context than it has done for the last couple of centuries in North America and Europe.
You mentioned also the differences, the difficulties perhaps, between house churches, the unofficial or underground church in China, and the officially recognised patriotic church. I'm wondering how this will be reflected in the work of the conference.
There'll be reflections about these debates. I think a lot of the presentation will be touching upon empirical studies of the growth of Christianity in China in recent times, and also historically. We'll have a number of people presenting on the 19th and 20th century missionary movements. Some will be looking at the earlier missionary movements in the centuries preceding those, and some will be looking at how Christianity has grown in recent times. There have been tensions historically in recent decades between government-approved forms of Christianity and other forms of Christianity, and that continues. I think in recent years there's been a healthy growth in the dialogue and constructive approach between, for example, the Vatican and China. The Secretary of State, Pietro Parolin, has done a great deal to help promote those. And in his earlier work, before he was Secretary of State, he was very good at promoting dialogue with the Vietnamese context as well as the Chinese context. And I think both the Chinese government now and the mainstream churches are looking ahead towards a more positive interaction. And maybe in the future, that will allow some of the unofficial groups to come more into the limelight and into the open. And I think the Chinese government itself has transformed many of its policies with regards to religion. And it's still a work in progress. You know, it's only since the late 1970s that the ban on religion in China was lifted. So we're talking about, in the modern and postmodern context, a country where religion is still very much in its infancy in terms of organisational aspects. And of course, one of the things that many people are rediscovering are the older traditions of religion in that context as well.
It's also true, though, that in some places, many places, there's still significant persecution. People are still jailed for their faith.
There can be. And this is one of the areas where most of the mainstream churches and other faith groups are trying to find a way to work with the Chinese government to put a stop to this. Globally, we see that in many contexts today, people are persecuted for their faiths or discriminated against because of their faiths. It's not just in China that happens, of course, and we see it in Western contexts with a lot of anti-Islamic prejudice that's grown on ignorance and political misinformation in recent times. I think the Chinese context, the persecution of not just Christians, but members of other faiths as well. For example, one of our presentations at the conference will be about Chinese Muslims. It's something that has to be overcome and transcended. I think it's part of a wider social problem with persecution of people for different belief systems, including political. And I think China is edging towards being more tolerant of a plurality of belief systems, and it's growing. And it continues to grow. And of course, we see just in really its economic development in recent times that pluralism is increasing, and pluralism is proving to be good for China. And I think the Chinese government have accepted this and embraced this. And Hong Kong itself is, you know, it's pluralism embodied. And it's not just in its political and organisational aspects, but also in its cultural aspects. So I think pluralism will, you know, not to put a pun on it, will help prove to be the salvation of China in the long-term future.
My thanks there to Gerard Mannion, Professor of Catholic Studies at Georgetown University and founding chair of the Ecclesiological Investigations Network.